Coach, it was a struggle from the start. That second half, though, got out of control. Can you pinpoint what took place and what the problem was?
Yeah, no, we got our butts whipped. That was not even close.
We just beat ourselves. Well, I had a lot of mistakes on my behalf.
It sucks. Losing sucks, and we gotta get over that.
You know, I mean, it's frustrating when you know, watching film that you're the better team and you don't come out with a win.
Oh, I hate losing. I really do.
We had a chance, and we gotta learn from it and make an adjustment. Look at the film and get better.
And it stings, but trying to tell the guys in there, you know, this is life. It can't define you.
I've never known a man worth the salt who deep down in his heart didn't appreciate the grind. But this, but to win! And to win!
There it is, a win for the Angels. It is first to the
end. Oh, flash back, deep left field. That goes up to, back near the wall. It's out of here.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
If he goes down again, it's over. Ali is the knockout winner.
Welcome back to another exciting week on the Eternal Warrior podcast. The EWP, helping young people in their quest for self-mastery, sharing stories from the battlefront in the war against Satan and pornography.
Hex yeah.
Hex yeah. Absolutely.
Hex yeah. That's what we doing. Yeah. It's such a good day. Such a good day to be alive and to be fighting Satan and to be kicking him right in the goods,
right in between the eyes, yeah, and right in the booty.
Amen.
Kick him wherever you desire.
That's right. Yep. No, it's good to be with y'all listening once again, and we've got a special episode here today with a special guest that we haven't heard from in a while. But before we dive in with our man Maurice Harker. Wes, what did you think about our last episode with Ethan and Jacob?
Man, recording that episode was really special. I felt a kinship and a longing to have that kind of relationship with my brothers. To hear Ethan and Jacob be so vulnerable, sharing their story about how they fought the same fight in the same household for so many years without knowing it, and how much liberation and peace and trust was formed, and just how, like, being able to share it, the fight with each other, automatically cut their battles in half. And it was just, I don't know, like, I'm just rambling now, but it was amazing to hear that story.
It was so cool. No, I'm right there with you. I think what was cool is to see not only like the love and the trust as you would have with your brother, but the respect. Yeah. It was like this really cool, and I think that's what happens when we're vulnerable with whether it's a sibling or someone close to us, and we share it in a way, we share our scars and our battle in a way that's like, hey, this is what I'm doing about it, and this is how I'm fighting back. There's this like respect, and I think that's what I felt with Jacob and Ethan that was super unique and super cool, and they had a lot of really cool insights.
Well, and just to hear how their dad facilitated their mutual recoveries, and how, I mean, Dave totally could have stepped in and, you know, taken matters into his own hands, but instead he's like, no, these boys need each other, and they need to come forward to each other in a way that, you know, I can nudge them, I can give them the idea, but the spirit and to trust the Lord that they will follow through on that was nothing short of inspirational. And if I've said once, I've said it a million times, I want to be Dave when I grow up. He is the most amazing guy. And Ethan and Jacob definitely don't fall far from the tree.
Agreed. If you guys haven't listened to it, please do. It's you won't regret it. Let's just put it that way.
At all. And if you want to share it with us, your story, and it lines up with some of the other things we're trying to do here on the EWP, please reach out to us. Nothing does Spence and I better than to hear your stories. You can reach out to us at podcast@lifechangingservices.org.
That's right.
That's right.
So I think we should listen to Cody.
And now a word from our sponsor, Monsieur Cody Hobbs.
Hello, Eternal Warrior Podcast fans. Cody Hobbs here. So grateful for spending Wes being mentors to so many. If you're listening to this, you may be going through some unexpected pain. I have spent a couple of decades helping people overcome such hardship and would love to be of service to you. From a 10-minute free chat to a full assessment, you can call 385-519-6089 to set that up. That's 385-519-6089. Whatever it is, you're amazing, and of course, you got this.
Monsieur. I don't know how they'd say it in French, but guys, if you are in a spot in your journey where you're just thinking, man, I need some additional help, reach out to Cody, reach out to us, get the help you need. It's worth it. And in fact, that's kind of what we're talking about today, interestingly enough. I guess before we say what our topic is, Maurice Harker is in the house, yes, in the virtual house.
Thank you,
and
brother.
I know all of you that were listening, I know you could feel it even before we introduced him, the power and the strength that is with us.
Probably they could.
if you guys haven't, like, if this is your first time listening to the pod or anything, this is... We're so fortunate to have the founder of Life Changing Services with us here, and director, Maurice Harker. Maurice has developed through, you know, the hand of the Lord has developed the Sons of Helam program. The Like Dragons Did They Fight book is all him, and he has brought this movement to life and has benefited my life greatly and my future family's life greatly, Spence's life immensely, and so many of you. And we're pleased as punch to have you on the show this week, man. We love you.
Well, thank you, brethren. I must confess, I was sneaking in some listen to's of you guys recently. And I must say, I almost came to tears of gratitude. It wasn't too far into my work that I realized I ain't got enough. I am too limited in my personality. I'm too limited in my exposure to people. I'm too limited in many things. And when I see how you have used your talents, how you've used your skills and ignored your weaknesses, and said, we're going to do it anyway. And I hope that all of those who hope to serve and help, one of the most important things you can do is to feel like you're like unto Nephi, Moses, or Joseph Smith, and discover that your inadequacies are a requirement. You must be insufficient to be a tool in the hands of God. And if you feel insufficient, you are qualified for the work. And I've watched Spen and Wes demonstrate that. They are both in tune with their flaws. They're both in tune with their weaknesses, and notwithstanding. And as you listen to me, I may have a refined and carefully prepared voice tone for these things, but those who know me well will know that he's kind of a messed up guy, okay? But notwithstanding, we have learned to follow President Uchtdorf's philosophy, lift where you stand. So each one of us stand on the edge of this giant piano and we do our thing. I do my thing. Wes and Spen do their thing. Cody does his thing. And the over 100 people now who work with and for Life Changing Services in all their different capacities as secretaries or mentors or therapists and all around the circle, we are able to serve over 1,500 people a week at this time. And that's not even including the audiences who listen to podcasts like this. And so we are thrilled to have an impact, notwithstanding our weaknesses. So please, it's one of Satan's favorite strategies to remind you of your inadequacies and flaws. But if you have them, join us, because then you'll be one of us, because we have them too.
Ooh, it's remarkable. 1,500 people attending
a week.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Maurice, and I want to ask you briefly to touch on this, because I know this is a goal that you and Life Changing Services have. It's not the 1500 Sons of Helaman or the 1500 Stripling Warriors. I know that you have ambitions to get that number to 2000. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what the goal is to, and how our audience can get involved to make that happen?
Sure. We run many programs. Our keystone program is Sons of Helaman, but Men of Moroni is the adult version of Sons of Helaman. We have Daughters of Light, which is to serve the women. We have the Worth Group, which is for the wives of the husbands who have stepped across the line and caused some pain. Eternal Warriors training systems, PWT systems, personal warrior trainers, et cetera, et cetera. Passion Project training systems. So we have all these different systems, but it is true that I personally, I delegate most of the responsibility for those other programs, but I continue to hold on to the responsibility of Sons of Helaman. That is my baby. That's my thing. And I have this obnoxious, almost obsession with this 2000 Sons of Helaman. Now, if I was satisfied with the 2000, well, that's not even close to the actual number that we've actually served since it started back in 2005, but I want 2000 per week. Okay. I want 2000 Sons of Helaman per week. We're not there yet. We're about a fifth of the way there, but we are watching what's happening with technology, and COVID is actually our friend, because it has sped up the use of technology like this. People are more willing to use Zoom. They're more comfortable with it. They're more podcasts. People are listening to stuff more and more. And so one of the things that we're discovering is, if you have felt the spirit of the principles, if you have, if there's even a few of them, because you were reading Like Dragons, or you've participated, even if you didn't even graduate from Sons of Helaman, you just went to some meetings, if you've been in Men of Moroni, if you have a story of inspiration, please get it to Spence and Wes and Spen. And even if they don't use it on their podcast, they can pass it on to someone. Go to our Facebook page, Sons of Helaman Facebook page, and we intentionally have lots of people posting their stories, what they've learned, how they've applied the principles. And don't be afraid. If you want to post anonymously, when you send it in, just say, here's my story. Don't include my name. We're fine with that. But we find that those who submit stories aren't embarrassed. They're like, I want to help. I want to contribute. Because part of what we experience when we meet a fellow warrior is we're meeting a fellow warrior, not a fellow wimp or a fellow sinner. Because we just assume we're sinners, but we're warriors more importantly than we're sinners. And so if you want to help, there's always something you can do. Do a video, do an audio, do a Tiki Talk or a Snappy Chat or whatever your thing is that you're good at, okay? And just send us a little, it has to be less than 60 seconds, or don't Tiki Talks have to be less than like 5 seconds or 10 seconds or something like that?
I'm not a teenager. I'm not even a 20-ager anymore, so.
So whatever your favorite way to reach out to people is to share. Some people do finger puppets. Some people do dances. Some people just write boring stories, and people love that. Whatever your thing is, somebody out there is going to be benefited by your style of teaching a principle. So please teach and pass it on.
I love that. Everyone has something to contribute to this fight. Like, everyone has unique gifts, talents, abilities, and a network of people that can only be reached by that individual, right?
No, it may sound, I love that. It may sound bizarre, but I'm slightly offensive to some people. I know that's hard to believe, but my personality can be aggressive and intense and in your face. I've got an athletic background, and I don't mind getting up all in your grill. Some people like Cody because he's adorable and snuggly.
He is.
He is.
I, I'm so glad you said that, Rhys.
Okay. So if someone functions better in the presence of someone warm, I mean, we've got TJ Rowden, one of our clinicians, and he's extremely academic. He's got his doctorate degree, and he's really good at the technical science behind things. Then you have Chris Bynum, who is a seminary teacher, and he's really good at bringing the spirit into the room, and he doesn't ruin it like I do. And he's very good at being uplifting and edifying. And we just, there's so many others that have all these different personalities. Some of them are more playful. Some of them are more academically nurturing. And we can't do this work without the diverse personalities. We've got to have different types of servants, not just carbon copy. It was one of my biggest fears when I was trying to turn my life over to God. I really was hesitant because every time I considered it, I thought, you're just going to end up being a boring guy wearing a white shirt and tie mumbling over a podium and causing people to fall asleep while they eat their nachos during general conference. Okay. And I don't want to be one of those guys. And God's all, do you really think I would have you lose your personality if you became a tool in my hands? Okay. So if you want to be one of God's warriors, you're not going to lose your personality. You're just going to become awesomer, because that's a word.
Oh, Maurice, I love it. Everyone listening to this, let's get there. 2,000 young men in Sons of Helaman every week. Let's do it. And you be a part of that.
We're ready.
Love that. Cool. And Maurice, before we got started here tonight, you talked about the conversation that you've been having with a lot of local bishops in order to help get those who were kind of on the fringe. And I know that Spence and I have talked a lot about, we've talked a lot to that demographic of people who maybe are listening, but aren't sure what your next step is in recovery, how to get the help that you need. And Maurice, a lot of these bishops have asked you, what can I do to get those that are on the fringe and that have challenges but haven't spoken up? How do we mobilize that demographic? What was the advice that you gave them?
Okay. So we have discovered, and I'm trying to figure out how to adjust the discussion tonight to be to the young man as opposed to the bishop. So let me switch it over to the young man for a second. If you've been listening to Wes and Spen, you should have heard by now a little bit about this strategic genius named Satan, who likes to play head games with people. Okay, he just loves to mess with people and mess with their lives. Well, one of the greatest talents that youth tend to have is vision. Naive vision, often, because they go, when I grow up, I'm going to be a fireman. When I grow up, I'm going to be a policeman. When I grow up, I'm going to be the president. So before they're teenagers, that vision is pretty broad and pretty wide. As they go through their years, their youth years, that vision starts to continue to be creative and enthusiastic quite often. I'm going to become an NBA basketball player. I'm going to become a chemist. I'm going to become all these things. And we use our imaginations almost always to our advantage because we dream up pretty dang cool stuff. Unfortunately, there is a demon with 7,000 years of experience who is aware of that talent and just might use it against you. Okay. So, for instance, the most common one we see, if you are a warrior mentality who is starting to understand, I think I will win this battle better if I start creating teammates. Okay. Who might be a teammate? But even at that point, you're like hesitant going, ah, I imagine that would be horrible. Okay. Now, if you're new to the concept of Satan participating in your life, you won't notice that scary thing you're imagining was actually formulated by the dark side. Because the idea that if you slide into your bishop's office and you do the normal adolescent male bishop interview, okay, that's kind of the normal adolescent male bishop interview. Bishop says, how's it going?
No, it's
stuff.
Fine. Yeah.
Fine. good.
I'm good. I'm good.
I'm good.
It's good.
How are you?
Now, let's pretend in your imagination that you even consider adding the bishop to your team. Like, I think I'm kind of losing some battles here, but we all know exactly what the bishop's going to do as soon as you imply that you're a sinner. Okay, he's going to dive over the desk and grab your neck in a grip lock and say, "You freaking pervert. I can't believe you're even in my office." Okay, and he's going to get that hammer out that he hides behind his chair and beat you with it. "You freaking butthead. Ah, okay, I hate you." Okay, then right after Sunday, on when he just finishes having Billy stand up there, "Billy is the greatest kid in the world, and let's all in favor of him becoming an elder, blah, blah, blah." He's going to have you go up there and say, "Sam's a freaking sinner. All in favor of sending him to hell? Raise your hand." Okay? Because we know if you even give the bishop a hint of your challenges and battles, he's going to destroy you. Now, what's sad is when I'm having this role play with a group of young men, they're all nodding their heads going, "Yeah, that's what the bishop's going to do." I know it's true. I have a testimony of that. That's not even exaggerating. That's exactly what the bishop's going to do. Okay. Now, what we've been doing, what we've been doing with bishops is, it's hilarious. The bishops who actually will do it, okay, is we actually have them do the role play just like that in front of their young men, just over the top.
Really?
Because what it does. So imagine you're 16 and you're waiting for a boring thing from your bishop. Okay. So he's got up there. "We're going to role play a few little conversations here." You get the young men's leader, you know, they always have one guy that's kind of adolescent that really relates well to the young men. Yeah. And you have him play the role of the young man. And so you get a desk out in front of it, and you get the young man, the leader, to sit down. "I kind of sort of got something to talk about. You know, I'm feeling kind of awkward about it." And then the bishop does jump over the desk and knock the guy off his chair and beat him with a Nerf hammer and just yell at him. And what happens fasting on a psychological level is it actually breaks the trance that the young man has. Like, "I actually thought that was going to happen. I actually thought," like, this happens every time I meet a young man in my office whose parents have talked him into coming to see me and considering Sons of Helaman. I will role play with him what's going to happen when he walks into the group room. Okay. And I always do the role play with the exaggerated lie first. Okay. Because it totally, the kids, you know, you walk in, the guys are all, "Holy cow, freaking pervert. Oh my gosh. I can't believe you even would walk into this space. You're getting your cooties on me. Oh, gross. I'm going to tell the whole school that you are messed up." The guys all like,
I was going to say, I think that's one of the most intimidating factors is, what if I know somebody when I go into group, right? Like, what if I see someone that I know from school? Mm-hmm. That was like the most mortifying thing. I remember I went to a 12-step group when I was going to school before Sons of Helaman up at Utah State. And I was so scared I would see someone from my stake or from a class or something. And that happened. And being able to be prepared for it would have been a huge benefit to me.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Now that I've got some guys that are veterans, thank you. That segued us right into what I wanted to talk about for a minute. Okay, this is what I do with the young men. And please, if you're a listener, please pay attention to this. Let's pretend now that you've been attending for a week, a month, 3 months, 5 months. Let's pretend you've been attending and you've started to experience that brotherhood. You've started to experience that connection. You've started to experience the joy of success, the confidence of success. You've even heard yourself on accident teaching principles to the newer guys. You're like, "Whoa, I just taught that and it sounded really smart. Like, I'm actually getting this stuff. This is feeling good." You're getting some momentum. Okay. You're in there with your brothers. All right. So Wes and Spen, I want you guys to put yourself in that position.
Okay.
Okay. And then someone walks in that you know for the first time. Mm. Okay. Now, how do you feel about them, the new guy that just walked in?
It's like an admiral. Like I know how hard that first time is, and I'm just so proud. I'm so like, yeah, like, dude, yes, welcome.
So yeah,
there's just a crazy respect and gratitude that they have taken that step. And like all of a sudden it just reaffirms the whole I'm still not alone type thing. You know, like I think we all kind of have the blinders come off when the first time we go to group and start to have some type of recovery community. Like, man, I'm not alone. There are great people that are going through the same thing I am. And then to have someone that I know walk through that door, you're like, man, and like, man, I want to help them. I want to help them because I've received so much help and you want to pay it.
Okay. So let me make sure I understand what you guys just said. Are you telling me that if I walk in there, the first emotion you're going to have about me is respect? The 100%. First feeling you're going to have about me is admiration? Wait, maybe you didn't hear the part about I'm a pervert.
Well, okay, we're all perverts.
I don't think you understand. Okay. I have been spending, you know, days preparing for you to be horrified by seeing me walk in. I've imagined, I didn't know I was imagining something that Satan put in my head, but I thought I was imagining reality. You're telling me that what I imagined is wrong?
Totally.
That if I walk in that room and I see someone I know, they're going to admire me? That doesn't even make sense. That you're going to respect me more than the other guys at school? Now, explain that one to me. Okay, so now we pass each other in the halls at school. Are you telling me that you now have more respect for me than the other guys in school? Okay, you got to explain that to me. That doesn't make any sense at all. Why would you admire me more? Why would you respect me more?
Because I know what it takes. Because I've walked through that door and it was the hardest thing I've done up until that point in my life. And now that I see somebody else do that, like, man, like you can ball, man. You know, you're doing, like, you have the challenge that I now realize, because I've been educated correctly about the evil pervasiveness of pornography. I know how systemic and ubiquitous the addiction is. And man, you're doing something about it. That's cool. And it's rare. It's rarefied air, and you're different because of it. And I respect that.
Thank you. Yeah. Spen, what would you, if you saw me in the halls at school?
Yeah, I think there's something really, really powerful about learning about someone's challenge and that they're doing something about it, that they're taking action instead of just letting things happen to them. And because like Wes said, I've been there. I've been in that spot for years where I didn't want to tell a single soul. And the worst possible thing that could ever happen would be that someone would find out that I looked at pornography and masturbated. That would be the number one worst thing. So I get what it's like to be on that side, and I get what it's like to get through that door and to face it and to accept that I've got this challenge, this problem that I want to fix. I want to get better. And then I'm doing something about it. So I just think that there's just, there's complete admiration and respect.
So tell me this, thank you. Won't you make fun of me in the halls at school if we run into each other? And if not, why wouldn't you? Why don't you make fun of me in the halls?
I'm you with found you.
What does that even mean?
I'm. How can I make fun of you for struggling with something I'm struggling with? It's like we're homies. We're bros. We're in it together. That's not, there's no way, there's nothing I could make fun of you about.
Thank you, yeah, Wes.
There's just such a mutual brotherhood. Like, why, how hypocritical if I were to make fun of you? And what is there to be ashamed of? Like, you're doing something about it. There is nothing to apologize for or to be embarrassed about because you're addressing your challenge. You're owning your mortality and you're doing something about it. And you're in the 99th percentile of young men. That's gangster. That's cool.
So one of the things I wanted the listener to hear is what it's going to feel like to walk in that room, because we have intentionally created an environment of brotherhood. It feels like men who've been through boot camp together. It feels like men who have been to war together. It feels like, and when you hear stories about soldiers who create this eternal bond with each other because they've been to war together. And once you walk in that room, you are one of us, because we will take you in. We only have one new guy at a time. One new guy comes in and meets the rest of the team, and it is phenomenal. And they may have struggles. They may still be trying to figure some things out, but they are warriors. Now let's back up a second, back to when you're sitting there at home and you haven't even talked to your bishop yet, and you haven't even talked to your parents yet. I'm going to apologize in advance that some of these bishops and parents are a little amateur at this, but there's a game you can play with your bishop and your parents, okay? It's a fun game, okay? Here's how you do it. You say, Mom, Dad, okay, if I was to, let's change that, Mom. If Bobby, my little brother, or Sam, my older brother, was to walk in and like confess some seriously messed up stuff to you, like that stuff that like makes your face turn pink. Okay, let's practice this, Mom. In fact, let's do a family home evening on it. In fact, I love it when teenagers do a family home evening that is designed to embarrass the parents. Okay, all right. We're going to do a family home evening, and we're going to show all the kids how not good at handling your kids' sins. Okay. All right, Mom, Dad, here's what we're going to do. Okay. I'm going to pretend I'm your daughter. Okay. And it's fun for boys to pretend they're girls. Sometimes they have a blast with that. I'm going to pretend your daughter, and it's late Saturday night, and I'm coming home a few minutes late from a date. And I sit on the side of your bed and I say, I'm pregnant. Okay. Go ahead, Dad. Go ahead. Let's see how you handle it. Let's do a little role play, Dad. He's all, nope. Is that, so that's your plan? You're going to just sit there and go, okay, that's not helpful. Mom, what's your plan? Oh, here's your box of tissues. Mom's going, oh, you've ruined our lives, blah, blah, blah. Okay. What we're finding out is the mom and dads aren't so very good at even role playing this stuff. Okay. And we've had some bishops aren't so good at role playing. So you can wait, teenagers, young adults, for them to be good at it, or you can be the one who initiates it. Let's practice a role play here. Now, just make stuff up. I robbed a bank. I drowned a cat. You know, I threw my little brother into a wood chipper. You know, just make stuff up so that your parents can practice, because you want to keep it adolescent or else it's not very fun. Okay, you got to make sure you're having a good time with it. Now, interestingly, your parents, they probably are guessing something's going on anyway. They probably are going, we don't even know how to talk about this stuff. You can be a real good help. And by the way, if there's any parents who are listening in and kind of cheating by listening in on this stuff, even you can have the idea to do the role plays before your kid asks for it. I know that's kind of novel. Okay. But now a warning, here's what we've learned. You better practice by yourselves in your bedroom before you do in front of your kids. Okay. So you pick one. So husband, you be the teenage boy who goes to mom and says, so I've been checking out some quality porn, and not that really messed up stuff. I'm only checking out quality porn, like the classy stuff. not that classy nasty porn. Stuff. Classy.
Yeah.
By the way, that's a true story from one of my therapy sessions. Oh. I had a guy tell me, I don't think you understand, Maurice. I only view classy porn.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's a true story.
There's no such thing.
You guys know how the addict brain works. He was convinced that he was only viewing classy porn or safe porn. There's some other, and that's another category that I hear about. So imagine the father goes to the mom. Now, interestingly, the moms, they just fall apart during the role play. Okay, that's just awkward. No, actually finish the role play. Okay, and then switch. Then mom, you be the one who confesses to dad or talks to dad or tries to enlist him in your team. And then bishops, set up the role play. So the bishops are having a blast with this, the ones who are trying it out. And the kids are totally breaking their paradigm. Now, it's important you do it really wrong first. Okay, that's important to break the ice. It's also important so the imagination that has been created in their minds by Satan is shattered with its ludicrousness. Okay, that's why I always do the role play. Like if I got a relatively new kid in Sons of Helium group, I will role play him announcing he's been lying for 2 weeks. Okay. All right, guys, let's all practice responding to someone who lies for 2 weeks. And someone will jump up, you freaking blah, 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 you know, on the verge of cussing. Someone goes to punch him.
How could you?
You lied. None of the rest of us.
Put him in the stocks.
I'm so offended.
The wood chipper. I like the wood chipper.
The wood chipper.
Let's put him in the wood chipper.
Feet first. Now, then we demonstrate how it's done correctly. Okay. This one's always fun in Sons of Helium because there's actually some guy there that says, can we do this for real? Because I actually have been lying for 3 weeks.
Like, sure, that's bro. Actually real. Yeah.
Yeah. So can we do it for real? Because I've actually been lying for 3 weeks. Okay. Then some guys go, you get an extra hug, bring it in. And he's like, oh, thank you so much. Anyway, whatever personality the group has. But please, bishops, and please, parents, please practice, because you might think that you're ready. And you might have imagined, you might have even told your kids, if you tell us, we will love you and we'll be kind. But even that, I've got parents that are too far to the nice side. Don't worry about it. And I got parents too far to the mean side, some parents too far to the strict side, some parents too far to the loose side. It's really important that you practice your response so that you like it, so you're proud of it.
And that it fits your familial brand, right? Yes. That it's confident, that it's
that's like, yours.
Yeah, and that your kid is actually talking to their parent and not their parent acting like what they feel like a parent should be.
Mm-hmm. No. Now, parents, if you're feeling really courageous, grab one of your kids and have them practice with you. Say, here, I want you to confess or to enlist me, whether it's a confession or an enlistment, like, hey, mom, I could use your help. Mom, I don't know what to do. So give your kid a script. Give your kid a script of what you're hoping they will ask you anyway. Because sometimes they don't know the words. And we've actually had some cases where the kid has gone to their parent a little while later and said, do you remember that fourth card you had me practice with? Let's pretend that's real. Hmm. Let's pretend that's real. And mom's all, pretend? And they're so, yeah, well, kind of let's not pretend it's fake. Okay. And then the conversation starts. But everybody already knows what everyone's going to say because they role played it.
Yeah.
What we're finding is Satan's ability to mess with the imagination is not being overly overpowered by just talking about what's going to happen. If you come see me in the bishop's office, I will be nice to you. If you come to your parents, we will be kind to you. That's not enough detail for their imaginations to override what Satan has put in there. So yeah, please. Go ahead, Wes.
I think so many youth, I felt this way, is that the bishop's office had become the principal's office somehow. And it's not a safe way. It's an institutional fear thing that like we have to repent because we made a mistake instead of we get to have a conversation about improvement because we're mortal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what it should be instead of so much weight and gravity placed in this one solitary event that it shouldn't be. It should be a continued conversation that happens over and over. It's not just, you know, leave your rocks at the bishop's office or something like that. It's, no, go talk about the rocks you carry around then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hmm.
So let's talk about the next phase of the conversation. We have many people, adults and youth, who have who've crossed the breach, the courageous line of building a relationship with their spouse, their parents, and or their bishop. But the church leader, the spouse, the parents start to feel overwhelmed with inadequacy of their own about how to help. Okay. I was talking to a bishop earlier today, and we intentionally have not created a protocol for this because parents and spouses and church leaders are on a wide range of skill level on how good they are at counseling. Some of them have been in training for years. They've worked on it very well for a long time, and they're very capable and very competent and do a great job in counseling type settings. Spouses who understand how not to be a therapist, but be a skilled spouse, parents who know how to be parents and not be a therapist, and they provide a lot of value. We have another end of the spectrum where a bishop who's, oh, I just talked to one earlier today, who's been a bishop his whole life, or bishops, excuse me, for 2 months. But he was a dentist, a plumber, or a farmer before that. And he's not only not good at counseling, he doesn't even want to be good at counseling.
Hmm.
Okay. He's like, I barely even like being a bishop. It's like, I will fulfill my calling and I will be a good judge in Israel and I will be encouraging. But if you have something complicated, I'm in over my head already. And there's no reason for these bishops to feel like that's inappropriate. They know their strengths. They know their weaknesses. Now, what most of these parents, spouses, and church leaders don't know what to do is when they do reach that threshold of I'm in over my head. And so they try saying things like, I think you need to go to a treatment program. Or you need professional help. You're a mess. Okay. Or you're going to need a therapist for those issues. Or you need a psychologist. Okay. Hmm. Strangely, that's not encouraging for most listeners.
Okay. You're broken and you need professional help.
Yeah.
You are a mess.
You're beyond my help. Yeah. I there's nothing I can do.
I do not have the skill set you require.
Okay. So we've learned a very effective phrase that is very easy to memorize. Okay. And that is, I want you to meet somebody. Okay. I want you to meet somebody. All right. We've been working together on this for a while. We've got some good skills. We've got some cool things we've accomplished, but I think I now want you to meet somebody. I want you to meet someone who I've known for a while. I've got some trust in, I have some confidence in. And yes, parents, spouses, church leaders, do your homework. Find a skilled person that you trust. I like to believe that the people at Life Changing Services would fit well onto that list, but there's lots of skilled professionals out there. Please do your homework and find at least one skilled self-mastery specialist who you have confidence in both their personality and their techniques and their methodology. Okay. So that you can be telling the truth when you say, I want you to meet somebody that I've talked to, that I've studied their stuff. I want you to meet them. Okay. Because if you just do that much, any specialist who's worth their money will take care of everything else in the first 30 minutes. If a therapist cannot bridge the gap of trust and confidence and build a relationship in 30 minutes, they do not deserve to be a therapist. Okay. You did all the hard lifting. You got them in front of the person. You got them to have a conversation with them. The specialist should be true to their name, a specialist. Okay. And so it's my responsibility once the first 15 seconds of the conversation has started, it's my job to take it from there. Hi, we've never met before. A common thing I say with brand new young men is, are you here by choice or were you forced? It's a weird question to ask, but they feel like, well, that's a pretty good question. Like, oh, that's a smart question. And they always answer the same way, both. Well, go ahead.
No, nobody made me come, but like, I guess it was my mom's idea or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I tell them, for young men specifically, that's very healthy, because a young man who came to a therapist all on his own, that's a little on the weird side. That's like, Mom, I'd like to go to the dentist. I'd like the dentist. That sounds like a great idea. Okay.
Okay. That would just be weird.
I just wanted to shadow you and learn.
Yeah.
But on the other end of the spectrum, they have to show some resistance to show that they are an independent man. So, you know, okay, fine. You can't make me, but I'll go ahead and go. That's actually really healthy, to be wise enough to cooperate, but stubborn enough to be slightly resistant. Hmm. That is the best type of brain for a therapist to work with in a man's brain anyway. Okay, a great balance between strong yet flexible. So if that's where your head is at, if you're a listener to this and half of your brain's going, I just don't want to be submissive to someone else's influence and mind games and trying to mess with my head and making me think and do things. Good. You should have that. We don't want someone to come in our office with what I call the wet oatmeal brain. And they come in here, mold me any way you want. And 20 minutes after you leave my office, you just, you're back down to the way you were before. I want some resistance. I want some pressure. I want some fight back. Okay. But I also need someone who's got just enough humility to know that they might not be the wisest person on the planet yet. I have no problem with the word yet. And I invite every one of my clients, every one of my students to outsmart me at some point. Okay. Yeah, I totally will throw the gauntlet down. You are invited to become smarter than me someday. But you're not going to be for at least 20 years.
I've got a quick question if you can address it. I love how you said, like, working with men, that is the best type of mindset, is someone who is willing to try things, but is maybe even skeptical or still wanting to defend themselves or be in a place like that. Can you tell us why and how that manifests itself later on in successful recovery?
I need a man to have some fight in him. I need a man to fight with me somewhat. I need there to be some grappling that takes place, because if they don't have that going on, they're not going to integrate the ideas into their head. There's the second type of brain that's not very fun to work with, is the cinder block wall brain, where they just sit there and they block everything. Okay. And it just slides down their face onto the ground. Okay. And then there's the one who agrees with everything, the opposite end of the spectrum. And so it always works better if there's a discussion that's almost an argument with men. Okay. Like this thing, this deviant sex chemistry thing you're talking about, Maurice. So you're saying all sex chemistry is deviant? I'm all good. That's a good question. Now we're talking. Now we have something to discuss. You promote violence too much. Why do you always promote violence? Good. Now we're talking about something. Now we can talk about warrior chemistry versus anger and uncontrolled anger. Now he's learning how to think for himself and integrate principles. The ones who fight over the principles are the ones who it sticks with the longest. And just so you know, this ties in nicely to Enos's wrestle with God. Okay, I am confident that one of the most important things you can do in your relationship with God is to wrestle with him, to fight with him over principles. How does this concept work? I did it with him a lot. Like, okay, one scripture says that you're going to punish me for eternity. The other scripture says you're very merciful. What the heck? How does that even work? Like, I need to understand these concepts. And it's that mentality that brought to the surface all the principles that are in the Like Dragons book. Okay, what's with all the war chapters? This is supposed to be an uplifting scripture, and it's got war all over in it. What's the deal with that? Okay, and it's supposed to be for our day. How does that even work? And then I kept studying and trying to figure it out. And so that mentality really keeps a man's brain engaged. And any treatment program, any philosopher who tries to tell you, you have to let go of that part of you, that you have to relinquish your fight. God blessed us with energy, this warrior chemistry, and this passion that leads to passion projects. And I hope all you listeners who've been listening to Wes and Spen for some time, if you can't feel the warrior sensation behind what they teach, even when they're goofing off, even when they're playing around, you can feel that sharp edge to their intensity to serve you, to train you, to empower you. Okay. We men were blessed with this for a reason. It is a gift from God for us to be able to fight and win the war. And our women are very grateful for it. They feel safe when a man can use that energy to fight for her safety and protection.
Love that. And we our first episode that we ever recorded with you, Maurice, we dived into what warrior chemistry is. And if you haven't listened to that yet, season one, episode 6 or 7, it's titled Warrior Chemistry, The Antidote. And we actually dive into the specifics of what warrior chemistry is and how to cultivate it in your daily life. But I love what you said there, Maurice. And I always feel warrior chemistry from you about, like, this is a gift from God to stand up and fight for our values, that we actually because God has endowed us with the opportunity to fight, to defend, to take back what has been taken from us. We all of a sudden, we no longer take for granted our freedoms. We no longer take for granted the peace and the knowledge and understanding that recovery has afforded us. If we don't fight, we don't appreciate. And I love that Sons of Helaman has taught me that. And it's changed the way that I think about the gospel and the way I appreciate my testimony and the good things that we have in life.
Ooh, those words, struggle, wrestle, like fight. Isn't that what this life was intended to be?
You know,
good stuff, Maurice. Good stuff.
When I have those moments in time when I feel like I'm a little going overboard with this kind of stuff, like, I do worry about that. Two things come to mind. Take any of the recent general conferences, and you can even go back a long ways, because the very first general conference in the Gospel Library, I think it's the fourth talk by Marion G. Romney, he will tell you the same principles back in 1970. And in the most recent conference talks, President Nielsen is one of the ones who mentions and reminds us of Satan more often than any other general authority. But if you're wondering about this energy, this use of this energy, there have been some small adjustments made to this one of our sacred ceremonies that many of those of you who have served missions are a little bit older. And if you've heard it, it's a phrase that is still there and has always been there since I've been attending the temple. It's the phrase, "You will have power to crush his head." Okay, you'll notice that word. There's so many words in the thesaurus that could be used instead. Nudge, scoot, negotiate, discuss, avoid. Okay, Captain Moroni did not avoid Lamanites. Okay, when the enemy would approach, he would use stratagem and appropriate controlled intensity, which is another version of a description of warrior chemistry. It is not closing your eyes and swinging a battle axe without control. It is samurai-focused intensity that is designed to send a message, and the word crush is designed to be fast, thorough, intense. So if people misunderstand any trainings we have where I just don't think it's appropriate to engage Satan, okay, I don't know if you consider crushing as an engagement. Okay, it's not intended to be a 5-minute conversation. It's not intended to be an argument, something that is elongated. It should be as fast as a sniper's bullet. Okay, but sometimes it's a little more head-to-head, a little more face-to-face, and he shows up in your bedroom and says, "We should talk." Okay, if you talk, it's too late. So we practice, take him by the neck and hit his head on a rock and say, "How about we don't talk?" Okay. And you chuck him off your balcony and you go back to what you were doing with your passion projects and your other goodness. Okay. So in Sons of Helaman, in Eternal Warriors and Men of Moroni, we train in techniques for identifying and quick responses that are fast, accurate, and powerful the three ingredients necessary for any successful response to a military attack: fast, accurate, and powerful. And you can only get all three if you practice and practice and practice. And that's what our training systems are designed for. Okay. It's not designed to encourage you and have you feel good. A little warning: if you do choose to come to one of our training sessions, it is not a hug session. It is not a support group. Okay. You will experience support, but it's a training group. And you will sweat psychologically. You will be sore tomorrow. You will go, oh my gosh, what just happened? That was holy cow. Okay. So we are a training system that includes support, just like being in boot camp would. So prepare for intensity. Prepare to become warriors.
Oh man.
I remember when I first attended group session, part of me and some of the things you do in there, when we call it sparring, where we talk about or where someone kind of, we talked about role playing earlier, where someone takes on the role of Satan and feeding into the thoughts, and I was like, someone was getting in my face, and I was like, wait, are you serious? I was taken aback at the intensity of the situation, and at the end I was like, I don't know if this is for me. And then the guy that was getting in my face, and he'd been a general in the program for a while, and he said, you know what, with that attitude, I don't know if this is either. And man, like, that really stuck with me. And I'm not saying that to intimidate anybody, but maybe to highlight the appropriate intensity that is felt in group, that this is your life that you're dealing with. And if you're not going to take it seriously, it requires intensity. It requires all of your faculties and all of your attention and all of your focus, power, and drive to rid yourself of this addiction and to wake you up to what life really has to offer. And if you're not willing to do that, and to at least, as Alma would say, experiment on it, give it a shot, give place in your heart for your warrior to come out, then this probably isn't for you. But if you will do that, it will grow, and you will connect with a side of you that you haven't before unleashed. And I'm so grateful that I've met my warrior. Love warrior chemistry.
Yeah, that was dope. That was dope, Wes. Holy smokes.
Well, I do know that Satan's not kidding. One of the hardest parts of my job, that is also a reminder, is I get to hear women cry. On an average day, I hear between 2 and 4 women per day crying. And because the story of the man is, I just didn't take it seriously when I was a teenager, or I just thought it would go away, or I just didn't see the impact it would have on my wife, or I just didn't understand. And, you know, when I've had some head-to-head confrontations with Satan, and in his snarky little voice tone says, listen, dude, it's not about you. Okay, turning you into a sinner is kind of fun, and making you feel stupid is kind of fun, but it's all about making the woman cry. Okay, that's the personality of the entity we're fighting against. That's how he thinks. That's how he rolls. And so you may not feel motivated today. You might not feel like it's ruining your life today. And maybe you're used to your mom crying because that's just what moms do. All right. But we want to empower you so that it's your woman that's not crying. And these women are resilient. They're capable of bouncing back, and they can treat you like a hero, even if you've lost some battles, and they'll forgive and they'll be merciful. Okay. That's just how they roll. And I don't fully comprehend that myself. All right. But if you're being tricked into believing that what's going on for you isn't that big of a deal, maybe it isn't that big of a deal for you. It's a little step on a bar of soap and you fall on the ground. Okay. You slipped a little bit. All right. But it's their fear and their tears and their worries that entertains the dark side the most. So take him by the neck, beat his head on a rock, and say, no, this brain was built to do amazing things. His brain was built to do passion projects that change the world. And I will use that energy to make the world a better place. And I will find joy and happiness. And these women folk love heroes. They love a hero. And so you do your little thing. And as weird as it may sound, you don't even have to do anything that amazing. They're like, oh, you're like nice. And you're like, and that's a big deal. Like, well, yeah, because other guys are creepy and you're nice. And that's like heroic to me. Cool.
You're like, yeah.
And then you help the lady across the street and they're like, you're amazing. And like you balance your checkbook and they think you like walk on water because you didn't spend too much. Like, it's really weird. It doesn't take that much to impress a woman. All you have to do is not be a jerk. Anyway, I'm sorry, I digressed. I got a whole training system for marriages. So if you haven't looked into that, if you're listening on and you got a marital issue, look into the marriage repair workshop. We got a whole nother project going on over there. Awesome. There's a little commercial intervention there.
I love it. I love it. Maurice, every time we're with you, the Warrior Chems come hard and fast. And my two cents on just what you both have just said so eloquently is we're not going to win this passively. We're not going to beat Satan just by chance. It's not going to like, oops, I won. It's just not going to happen. You've got to take control of your life. You've got to do it. No one else is going to do it. And like Wes said, I'm so glad I did. Oh man, I met this warrior that I didn't know existed. And it's like, it's made me as proud as I am of that man that walked in the room for the first time at group. I think back to that little Spenny and I'm just like, dude, yeah, I'm so proud of you. And honestly, it's because of you, Wes. I mean, I'm just I'm so grateful for you and Maurice, of course, everything I learned in group, but like, guys, we can do this and you can do this. And there's a whole nother world out there waiting for us if we're willing to fight for it.
Yeah. If Satan is so intentional in how he has targeted you, singled you out and sought to shake up your world and use his flax and cords and turn those into iron chains. If he's been so targeted, so focused and so intentional, how arrogant and naive of us to think that we can get through this on accident or that we can overcome just by growing up or growing out of this. No, it requires everything. It requires all of our strength, all of our focus and concerted effort. We have to be intentional and dialed in addressing this. And if like, that's what it takes. And I'm so grateful that that's what it takes for me. Because if that's not what it takes, then I don't care as much. I don't put as much, I just don't put as much stock or reverence in my recovery. And I'm so, so grateful that it does require so much of me. Because it makes me a warrior. It makes me a man worth loving. It makes me a man. And I'm not a little boy anymore. I get to be a man and have a mustache and stuff.
Yeah.
And have a mustache.
No, have a mustache. And shoot guns.
That's right. Eat red meat.
Yeah.
You guys are awesome. I'm so grateful for how you inspire your listeners. I'm so grateful that there's so many listeners. What's the last count you guys had? Like, didn't you have like 100,000 or something like that of listens to your podcast by now?
It's a crazy amount. It amazes me every time I see the number. Let me see.
But you have a certain number of followers and a certain number of episodes people have listened to.
So we have like downloads that we have, but that doesn't include all listens. And I don't think we have an accurate number on that. So if you guys want to help us get more reliable data when you do listen to the pod, please download it and subscribe to it. But the official count, Spence, do you want to? I'm looking at it right now. We'll go ahead.
All time downloads, 62,500.
Snap, I believe is the word they say for that.
That is.
And crazy. And subscribers, how many subscribers?
We get about between 600 and 700 unique listeners per week.
Wow. Yeah. How fun. It's good awesome. Job. When I grow up, I want to be like you guys.
No, it's awesome.
I'm higher than that. You'll be all right. man, this is Freaks. Always, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. This is awesome.
It's a pleasure.
Is there anything, I guess we'll wrap with this, anything that you would say in wrapping to the young man, to the young person that isn't coming to group yet and hasn't taken that step or hasn't even talked to their bishop or hasn't talked to anybody about that? And then the second piece of just why you fight, Maurice, and why you won't give up.
Thank you. For the young man, so many things in my own life were attempted to be sabotaged by satanic false imagination. You know, everything from going to graduate school and you're going to look stupid or people are going to think you're a know-it-all. Doing firesides, I get a satanic attack every time I do a fireside or a large group presentation that says like, they're going to throw things at you. They're going to like make fun of you. They're going to do, so you're going to sound smart, but you're not actually smart. You know, everything that I do that's intended to move something forward, there's always some false imaginary catastrophe that comes with it. Young men asking girls on dates, they imagine some catastrophe is going to happen. And so what I've learned is just close your eyes and run into it. Just go. If you've decided that it's a wise idea, you just kamikaze it. You just dive into the bishop's office and you say, ah, I mean, that's all you got to do is say, okay, I'm here. Okay. You just dive in, you dive in your parents' room and say, okay, fine, I'll tell you. And like, tell us what, like once you say that, you can't go back. Like it's total kamikaze. And so you just show up at the therapist's office, you show up in group, you just show up the first time and what a surprise. It wasn't as bad as you thought. You show up and you give your first talk in church. You show up and bless the sacrament for the first time. You ask a girl on a date, all these things that appear to be catastrophic and scary. And then they turn out not to be. They're little wet paper sacks that all you had to do was poke your finger through it and it wasn't as scary and horrible as you thought it was. And once you see Satan's pattern with that, you're like, everything's smoke and mirrors with him. He's always doing smoke and mirrors. So you just blaze right through it. People, weren't you scared? Well, I was until I realized it was smoke and mirrors. Or what they call it in the scriptures, mist of darkness. Who knew that that was actually a concept? Okay. All right. Why am I fighting? The reasons I'm fighting have evolved over time, but instead of just changing, they just are more like sticks on the fire. You know, when I was first fighting as a young person, it was the fear of messing up my own wife. It's like, I'm pretty messed up. I should probably do something about this. You know, I started studying. I wanted to figure things out. Sometimes reasons for fighting appear inappropriate. Like I wanted to be famous at one point. I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to have an impact on the world. And it's like, isn't that a little selfish? Well, doesn't dry cow pies burn anyway? Like just throw stuff on the fire of motivation. I don't care what it is. The God I know, he's all, yeah, I'll work with it for now. He'll mature later. Like it may not be the most noble motivator, but we'll work with it. Okay. Then this weird thing happened where I actually started caring about people. It still confuses me that happened at some point. It's like, okay, it makes me sad if a young man is looking at his calendar and he's supposed to go into the MTC in 3 months and he's not winning his battles. So he decides to get a big red marker out and cross off going on a mission. And he's all, I guess I'll never go on a mission. That vision has been one of my biggest motivators. I just cannot tolerate the idea of one more kid crossing off, because you know what happens in our culture. You cross off mission, that means you cross off temple marriage. You cross off mission and temple marriage, that means you get leftover girls for wives. Okay. And if you get a leftover girl for a wife, you got a difficult life for the rest of your life. I mean, it's all imaginary, it's all scary imagination, but it's still catastrophic for the brain. And so I'm not willing to sit by. I know that right now, oh, there are more young men who are not going to call my office than there are ones who are going to call. I know there's more of you that are currently still scared. and you might not be ready to make the call. So I'm fighting to make sure as many as I can have access to the resources, because I'm not willing to stand before God and have him say something like, this kid over here, he was waiting for your information, but you were busy sucking your thumb. And so they never got it because you didn't do what you could do. Okay, I'm fine if there's a few I don't reach because it just was too far out of reach. But we've got people like Wes and Spen. We've got all sorts of these people reaching out. So please, I'm fighting because I love watching you win your battles and I cry when you don't.
Man, love that. Love you, Maurice. Thank you. Reaching out. And guys, reach back. Reach back to us, podcast@lifechangingservices.org. If you have a question or need to get in touch with Maurice, we'll send his info along to you. If you feel like, you know what, now's the time to take the step in recovery, get in touch with us and we'll get you help, the help that you need, or at least give you exposure to a lot of different options that you can help weigh for yourself. But guys, it's time to come out of the shadows. Shame loves the shadows. And the second you flip the light on and realize that, and there are so many other people in the room, like all of a sudden the smoke and mirrors are gone and you get to see your life for what it is, and you might just meet your warrior while you're there.
You find truth with light. You find it. Go towards the light. Thank you, Maurice. You're the man. We love you. And
thanks, brother.
Thank you all for listening. Love you guys.
All right. See you next time. Week.